There was an idea to bring together a remarkable group of Marvel Crisis Protocol players to see if they could give something more to the community. The Christmas Present Initiative. Last Christmas, we gave you the 18 days of Christmas, one for each affiliation. This year, we're doing it bigger and better. Not just every affiliation, but every leader will get their own episode. 33 leaders, one massive present to the MCP community. Hello and welcome to another Christmas episode, and I'm delighted to be joined by Kenny. How are you doing, Kenny?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful Thursday afternoon.
Well, who knows what day this is going to go out on. We're recording lots of these, and there's a number of them. We'll see when it goes out. Kenny, you might know from Advanced R&D or the Gamers Guild, and he is here with a present for us to talk about. Which leader are we focusing on, Kenny?
We're talking about Corvus Glaive, the one true leader of the Black Order.
Not a fan of Thanos, then?
I just don't like super big models like that.
That's totally fair. Okay, why don't you give us like an overview? How does Corvus go about winning a game, then?
So Corvus and Thanos sort of have common goals as far as death goes, but Corvus is a little more, I guess, aggressive with it, where Thanos is more like pinpoint with it. So Corvus will try and kill pretty much anyone and everyone he can, whereas to compare with Thanos, they might choose like a couple of specific targets. Now, I'll still target specific people with Corvus, but if there's people available to kill, I will try and do it. And so the way his leadership works, as you know, as you kill characters, your other Black Order characters gain power each time a character is killed or dazed. And so I typically try and have as many affiliated models on the table at one time. And this leadership, I think, it's a highly debated topic on whether it's worth a tactic card slot or not. I think it is, because you're just creating power out of nothing. And Black Order has some very nasty superpowers and spenders and tactics that they can use that power on. So it really starts to get the snowball effect going of killing and dazing characters. And so the way I try and do it is I try and kill characters who are scoring points or holding extracts so I can go up on points, because unlike Thanos, I don't have the VP for killing characters. So the more points I can score, the better. And so typically, like if I'm playing just like a 17 threat game, which is probably the most common, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I would look at something like Corvus with the Reality Gem, Proxima, and then Flavor out after that, like maybe Ebony Maw with the Space Gem and Supergiant, or typically my go-to though is a Black Dwarf and Black Swan with the Power Gem. And I found those four together are very strong and a lot to handle, because I mean, you can target Corvus, but then you have Black Swan breathing down your neck. If you're targeting Black Swan, you've got Corvus. And so you've got a lot of potential characters there who can really just output some damage. And so just to go through like my 10 characters, it's Corvus with the Reality Gem. So there's one restricted card. Proxima Midnight, Ebony Maw with the Space Gem. So there's my other restricted. And then Black Dwarf, Black Swan with the Power Gem, Supergiant. And then for out of affiliation pieces, I've got Toad, Black Cat, Baron Zemo, and Dr. Voodoo. And those out of affiliation pieces are really to like help me on the actual point scoring game. So people like Toad, Black Cat, and Voodoo who can help me with secures or extracts. And then Zemo is just mobile. So if I need to go and like point snipe somewhere, he can do that just like Black Cat can. And Zemo's a little more aggressive. So if it's like something like a single extract, Zemo would see the table. Multiple extract, Zemo would see the table. Black Cat would be on for more of the single extracts to try and get it and potentially run, as much as I don't care for that strategy.
Yeah, still, it's effective. I get what I want to understand is, because the leadership encourages you to play as many Black Order characters as possible. So is that always the case? You're trying to jam in as many of those as you can?
It really kind of depends on the matchup. something like, if I'm on Mutant Madman at 18 threat, usually I'll have like Corvus, Proxima. Where do I go with that? That's 8.
18. I guess you could go Maw and Dwarf.
Yeah, but then again, Maw has 2 physical defense.
That's true.
So I'll try to do Corvus, Proxima, I think Swan usually, because she's pretty mobile. So that's 13. And then after that, it's typically Zemo and Toad for my 18. And then, I mean, usually I try to have at least 4 Black Order characters, but sometimes like that, where like I have a 3 threat slot, Supergiant is not good on Mutant Madman. She's rolling 1 each time, and you need to get those flips as much as possible. So it really kind of depends on the scenario, but typically I try to go at least 4 Black Order characters, if at all possible.
Yeah.
But some scenarios like will require me to go wider, and so at 5 wide, it just depends. Sometimes I can fit 4 in, but usually there will be 3 there.
Okay, so you're trying to maximize that, but sometimes the threat is difficult for you. I guess we know Corvus is fantastic and Proxima is great with them. Ebony Maw has seen somewhat of a renaissance since his reworking, and Black Swan has always been great. I'm keen to get your thoughts on Black Dwarf and Supergiant as some of maybe the less well-regarded Black Order members.
Yeah, so Black Dwarf has been my MVP in a few games. I mean, he's got a 6 die builder for a 4 threat, which is, I think, unmatched except for maybe Gamora. I could be wrong on that, or at least like it's a builder. I think someone might have like a gainer or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can make arguments, can't you, that Zemo with 5 dice as a reroll is basically 6 dice. Mathematically, it's pretty close, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. So he's very strong, especially with Black Swan on the table. Like I've played a few games where Black Swan was not on the table with Black Dwarf, just because once again threat dictated it. But with Black Dwarf, he's able to help essentially taunt that people call it. Mm-hmm. It's like the reverse bodyguard where you have to be within 2 of the enemy character.
Yep.
So he can help keep Black Swan and Corvus alive. And he's tanky. He's 6'8" for his stamina. So he can take a lot of hits potentially for people. And the great thing with that is you've got Black Onslaught to get him into the action a lot sooner. The issue with him before was he was just so dang slow. But now, like with Black Onslaught, you can just drop him off in the middle of the table, and now he's suddenly a presence that your opponent has to deal with and handle and work around.
Just in case people aren't familiar with Black Onslaught, because it's not seen that much play, do you want to just run us through what that does?
Yeah, it's basically drop off whenever. Here, let me pull it up so I can read it exactly. So it's if Black Swan is within 2 of an allied Black Dwarf, when she uses the charge superpower, they may each spend 1 to play this card. After the charge movement action is resolved, but before making the attack, you may place Black Dwarf within range 1 of Black Swan. So basically, you have to have the power gem to do this round 1 for Black Swan to have the 2 power to charge and the 1 power for the tactic. Mm-hmm. You get Black Dwarf up into play, and then he's suddenly not wasting any actions to start potentially laying into whoever Black Swan has just attacked as well.
And you know, he's potentially protecting Black Swan if they're both close to the target that they're targeting.
Yeah, exactly. And so getting him up into play is vital if you're trying to put him on the table.
Okay. What about Supergiant?
Supergiant, she's a little more of like a tech piece for things like Wakanda or Web Warriors or affiliations who have a lot of pushes. So she can see play in... even in against Avengers, like you see a handful of pushes, so she can stop those pushes because with her supreme control power, when an allied character within range 4 of her would be pushed, she can use the power and that character is not pushed. So it is super useful. Mystic attacks are good into all 3 of those affiliations, Avengers, Web Warriors. and Wakanda, trying to take out potentially their leaders or just their general like characters that are weak against mystic attacks. The other use I found for it that's really cool is it stops if Bucky ever uses his Red Fury attack, it stops the push there, and he doesn't get those potential two extra assault rifles on top of it because there's no push to trigger those follow-up attacks.
Yeah, so that's cute. There's a nice little rules interaction there, because if he doesn't get the push, then he doesn't get the attacks. Yeah.
Yeah. She's not necessarily good against him in general outside of that, because, I mean, he just rapid fires her, and if she takes like one damage each time on four attacks, like she's going down pretty quickly with her one physical defense. And I mean, she has the thing where if she's attacked by, or she's damaged by a collision or a physical attack and she's holding an extract, she drops it. So more often than not, like I just don't even bother picking up extracts on her because it's not worth the ease at which she loses them.
Yeah, that makes sense. You mentioned Bucky. Was he at all in consideration, or was there too much dissynergy with the list?
I considered him, but I think my other characters were pretty good at killing, and so I needed a lot more potential control or just movement was what I was valuing. Like he would be like the number 11 character on this list if I could. And then if you're playing Bucky, you're tempted to not play as many Black Order characters because you're affiliated more easily.
Yeah. But he doesn't benefit from the leadership. So
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought that might be the case. But it seemed like he might be a sort of a natural fit and a go-to that some people might be considering. But I think you're right. You want something that your core characters are not doing, and your core characters are pretty good at killing stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all six of them are fairly good at killing. Except, I mean, Supergiant's all right at it, but that's not what I have her on the table for. So.
Sure. With murder in mind, then, if you win priority, do you normally pick secure or extracts?
I usually try and pick my extracts. So my extracts are research station, very central murdery place to be. I've got hammers because, I mean, I just like hammers a lot. More dice is just more better, as I've always said. And then like there's two potential, like if I play it, depending on what I play, like Black Swan can charge into someone who grabs a hammer and drop off Black Dwarf at the same time. So I can set up like kind of a trap there in a way. I can have whoever else like go pick up the other side hammer, like with priority. And then Corvus or someone else will typically pick up the back hammer. Maybe not Corvus, so I can save him for mothership plays. But yeah, typically I'll choose extracts. So I got research station, hammers, and then I've got alien ship crashes downtown. I like playing 20 threat. It lets me get more Black Order characters on the table. And it's just a slow point scoring game where like my opponent is somewhat forced to attack me, which is good because I have defensive tech. And then if they are trying to run away with it, they're dying on their own, which makes it easier to potentially catch them and kill them as well. And then for my secures, I've got Riot Spark over Extremists. I've got Intrusions open as across city as Seals collapse. And I've got the Terrigen Cloud sweep over the city. And I'm sure you might be asking why Extremists.
Yeah.
And that's because a lot of my Black Order characters, they have really solid defensive tech that's hard to chew through.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to heal them with on top of all the power they could potentially be gaining is, I think, really beneficial. And so I might be going four wide there, but I think I can control two of the points fairly easily and potentially if I can go up on an extract advantage, that would help as well.
Yeah, I buy that a lot. And I think it's actually not as bad as you might think. If you go for kind of a central deployment, then you've got options. If you think you're on four wide and you put two pretty close either side of your central back D point,
often what happens is your opponent will then spread out to both wide ones. You can then choose which wide one you want to focus on, and you kind of rotate around. So the ones, let's say you're going off to the left, the ones on your left of your D will go and try and dominate that point, while the ones on the right of the D will go to that central D. Your opponent is then splitting over kind of three crises, and you can slowly whittle them down, control those two, which gives you parity on secures, and then there's some extract game, and you know, you're probably not miles behind on extract. So I think that has a lot more validity than maybe it might seem at first. When you think of these, you often think of these like fast, zippy teams who want to rotate constantly around. But there's teams, like you talked about your defensive tech that's baked into the characters. They can be very hard to deal with if they are trying to dominate those areas.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's just, I just got to outlast them essentially at that point. And I feel like I can do that while dealing lots of damage.
Because even if they're trying to take you down, your characters are tough, then what, to survive, one of your other characters can then activate the extremist console to heal them, and that makes them even tougher to take down. Whereas probably most of the time you're activating your characters, whatever they're facing down goes poof, right?
Yeah.
Not quite any level, but you know, they hit hard.
Yeah. It's not guaranteed, but I mean, they hit so hard that it makes it, I feel like, easier to swallow that potential cost of being on a D. And then intrusions, it's just very central. And it's it's fun to potentially portal back and forth and be able to get people or kill people down pretty quickly. And, you know, surprise, there's a Corvus in your face, and makes it easier there.
Intrusions are known for being good for like those attrition dreams who can position around whilst also contesting those. So yeah, that totally makes sense. I guess Terrigens, rather than maybe some people might expect demon portals in there.
Yeah, so I'm kind of tired of demons play. And also Terrigen, it's another one where like I can get my characters there, I think, quickly, and then start scoring lots of points quickly. Like if I can guarantee like one side around or both potentially around, that's very helpful. Poison, I think, doesn't affect me as much because of my leadership. So I'm sort of circumventing like that power loss during the power phase by dazing and KOing characters to get the power for my characters anyway, which is super fun and super useful. I feel like I've had a lot of fairly good success on Terrigen Clouds in the games I've played it. Now it does damage my characters, which gets sort of around the defense or which gets around the defensive tech, but it can potentially damage my opponent's characters as well, and help me kill them more quickly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I guess if you're then losing on scenario for whatever reason, maybe they're controlling you, then that's helping you with the attrition play, because that would be damaging them. So I can see there's synergies there.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that might sound kind of interesting because I don't like cubes, and that's a similar kind of logic there. But cubes, there's a lot more, it's a lot more spread out, and it gives my opponents power, which I want to try and limit if I can, and only give them power as I'm hopefully dazing and KOing them.
Yeah. Okay, should we turn our attention to tactic cards then? So we've already touched on First of the Black Order, and you're pretty dead set that that's in every game.
Yes. Okay. I need my leadership.
Yep. But that does take up one of your five slots, but totally buy that could be worth it. What about the other ones? Are there any other cards, the affiliated ones, that come out a lot or maybe every game?
Black Onslaught comes out a lot, just because I like to play Black Dwarf and Black Swan together as much as I can. Blood Despair is another one that sees the table a lot, just because if I am getting dazed, I want my opponents to feel that pain as well. And I have lots of good attacks to Blood Despair.
Yeah.
It's always nice getting to like Blood Despair Black Swan when she has the 7 power to do her Everything Dies attack. Because she pays a 3 for Blood Despair, then does her Everything Dies. So she's potentially getting 2 attacks and a throw out of it. To just do tons of damage potentially.
Yep, that sounds painful.
That everything dies attack is probably my favorite attack in the game right now, just because it's got so much potential. It can throw Dormammu or the Sentinels, because it's not size limited. So
yep,
it goes crazy.
I'm slightly surprised that top of your list wasn't Mothership. Like, you'd think Black Order, you play Mothership every game.
Yeah, that's also top of the list.
Okay.
It's typically like First of the Black Order, Mothership, and Blood Despair are every game.
Which I guess is fine, because often what an affiliation will do is they'll take their one best affiliated tactics cards and two restricted. The fact you haven't got any restricted allows you the space to take those two extra affiliated cards. So that kind of pays off that you've got these high quality cards, that you don't kind of feel the loss of those restricted cards as much as some other people might.
Yeah, they've got such amazing tactics that having my restricted cards as the gems doesn't feel like a tax at all. It feels like I get to do more of what I want to do or what I'm good at doing. And that is the killing side of things. So yeah, Mothership, we'll see the table a lot. Black Onslaught, Blood Despair. Depending on what all I'm playing. I mean, if Ebony Maw is on the table, I'll typically take Shh. Just because canceling a superpower is always good. And then if like when Corvus and Proxima are on the table, I don't always have them on the table at the same time.
That's really, wait, back up. That's interesting. So Proxima's not an auto include every game.
She's not every game. It depends on threat, depends on matchup. Like sometimes, depending on it, like I prefer having Black Swan and Black Dwarf instead of Proxima. So I can have like, I don't know, it might end up with me taking like Toad or someone. But yeah, I don't always take Proxima, which is a problem because like my brain thinks I'm defaulting to Proxima. And so I'll take Execute when I don't have Proxima on the table.
Well, that's definitely one problem. But do you find when you're leaving a hat out that priority control is more difficult than you'd expect with a Black Order roster?
Not always, because sometimes like it'll depend on who I'm targeting, but I'll try and target characters who have activated first so I can still somewhat maintain priority. So like if my opponent's activated someone, try and kill them, let them get some of their activations in before I go for it. But sometimes it is a little tricky to try and juggle that. But I find it just more valuable to potentially have that defensive tech on the table with Black Dwarf or whatever else I'm bringing. I think in my Cuts game in season 8 that's finished and we're in season 9 now. In season 8 in my Cuts game with the Milo Man, I didn't take Proxima, and I took Execute and decided which was rough, but I mean, I didn't have much issue, I think, controlling priority even in that game. I ended up losing it. And I mean, Sasa played an amazing game and I was up ahead fairly early, still had decent priority, and I just, I don't know, made some poor decisions, but one of them being bringing Execute, having another tactic definitely would have been handy in that game. I don't know. It just doesn't always make sense to take Proxima when I have some other really strong options to consider.
Okay. What about some of your unaffiliated cards? What's good and why?
Yeah. So, my unaffiliated cards are specifically to keep my characters alive, or to keep my opponent from running away. So, or to keep my extracts in my control. So mission objective is the first one. Passing your extracts to another player to another character is definitely useful. Escort to safety and fallback are specifically there for maybe like a matchup like Malekith, where I want to get the heck away from him and then pop back on top of him with like maybe a different character and try and gun him down as quickly as I can. And then Marked for Death is for any of those black cats or spiders out there that are just super fast, and I don't want them to run away from my killing machine or potentially get their defensive tech rerolls.
Yep, that makes sense.
But yeah, I don't play those as often as maybe I could, just because I've found so much fun with the Black Order tactics and had some pretty good success there. Although I guess we didn't really talk about my unaffiliated characters as much and when I bring those, did we?
We kind of touched on them briefly, but if you want to expound on that, then please do.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar with those four tactics. It's for extracts and secures. So like Black Cat's there for another Malekith tech piece to potentially try and stagger him as much as I can. So he's less effective, and my characters are still just as effective at trying to take him out. And Voodoo and Black Cat are both there potentially for things like Avengers and all the legacy virus shenanigans that go on where I just don't want to deal with it. I can just play my Black Order characters and kill them anyway.
Yep.
They can't outrun them forever. But it's ideally to stop people from scoring those the legacy cure and getting that 8 points, because that's hard to come back from.
Yep. And you kind of talked about Zemo, didn't you, as your he's fast and he deals damage, and rerolls are always nice when you're trying to kill people.
Oh yeah. That's pretty much what Zemo's always there for.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the gist of it. You can always, with Ebony Maw, I know taking the Space Gem with him is maybe controversial, just because it is a restricted card, and I could have something like Sacrifice in play, or Brace for Impact, or whatever else. The Space Gem for him, whenever he's on the table, I think is really valuable, giving him like that extra mobility to potentially double tap people as he needs. I mean, you could potentially use the Mind Gem instead to help people move, or just play what people call Raw Maw and just have no gems. But I have two other five threats that I would like playing more than him, I think, at five. So having him as a six, I think, gives me that a little more points flexibility.
I'm interested to get your thoughts on this roster versus a Thanos roster. Why is it that you're championing Corvus Glaive at this point?
It primarily started as people were dogging on it so much, and I played it once, and I was like, I don't know why people think this is bad. Like, I think this is really good and really strong. Like, I played a couple of test games with Merzane here locally, and I was doing well. I lost both the games because I misplayed, and he might disagree, but he also pulled some crazy shenanigans to win one of them. So I gotta tip my cap to that. I played it twice, and I was like, this is a blast. Like, I was only playing Corvus. It was Corvus, Proxima, and I don't know who else it was at the time as my Black Order characters. And even playing with just three of those, I was like, man, if I had more Black Order characters on the table at a time, I think this could have legs as far as, like I mentioned earlier, like that snowball effect where you're dazing more people, your characters are getting more power to daze more people and just keep that ball rolling. So I sort of saw it there. I've done pretty well with it, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure.
It's been fun. It lets me play a little wider with Black Order. The reason I didn't pick up Thanos Black Order is just because I don't like playing narrow lists as much. I feel like there's a lot more decision points to make and a lot more thinking you have to do.
Very easy to make a mistake with when you've got three models on the table.
Yeah, and so it's a lot more forgiving having 4 to 5 characters on the table than it is playing with just three. And I have the flexibility to just pick and choose, like, do I want to go 4 wide, 5 wide instead of being like with Thanos, like it's like, okay, do I want to go three or four wide? And then like you're stuck on awkward maps with Thanos, and it's just harder to handle that. I used to have him in the roster, and I just never played him. I had like very, very, very like niche scenarios where I would choose to play him. Things like maybe against Criminal Syndicate or whoever on the Superpowered Scoundrels, the 20-point F-shape secure. But it just wasn't the meta for it. Like, it wasn't coming up much. And so I just dropped it. Or dropped him. And I had him with the Mind and the Soul gym. Because if I was playing against those, like, heavy control affiliations or tanky affiliations on that map, him having the Soul gym gives him so much more power to displace them, because they're doing like their web lines or what is it, Injured to Pain, where they're just blocking a damage by paying one power. And so all that opportunity for him to gain power in those specific situations was appealing, but it just never came up.
If you were going to be asking AMG for a Christmas present for this roster, maybe another character to add or something like that, what would you be asking them for?
Probably an affiliated Gamora and Nebula.
Oh yeah, pack. That'd be cool.
Because we have the one right now that's the it's the Guardians versions of those characters, but maybe a different timeline where excuse me, a different timeline where they are in the Black Order and affiliated here would be really cool to see, because I don't think there's really many other Black Order characters to choose from, unless we go with like, what is it, the Outriders, like those creatures and stuff. But I don't know. Then it becomes more like more grunts, and I don't know. That's just,
Be cool. They're the obvious ones that are missing, and maybe they could make use of the Daughters of Thanos tactics card then.
Yes, that would be really cool as well.
Awesome. Well, Kenny, if people have enjoyed this and want to hear more from you, where can they hear you?
Yeah, so y'all can listen to me on the Gamers Guild podcast. That's where you'll find me most. We have been doing like affiliation breakdowns, and I did a really fun affiliation breakdown specifically of Black Order with finger guns. And he was talking more of Thanos, and I was talking Corvus. And so you can hear a lot more of like the differences in the play style there if you'd like, or you can just find me on Discord. I'm in pretty much every single Marvel Crisis Protocol Discord has at KennyG21. And then maybe one day Advanced R&D will be resurrected, but for now life is just too busy and we just don't have the time for it.
No, it's okay. You can blame Cookie. It's allowed.
Yeah, I'll just blame Cookie.
Blame Cookie. Cookie ruined it. Yeah, that's cool.
Yep.
Still broad shoulders. Man, it's been a ton of fun. Thanks for taking the time to record, and have a great holidays.
Thanks, you too. Merry Christmas.
Simulation complete.